Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. And this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
What am I wearing today?
Oh my gosh. I came up into Gino's office and he has his chef coat on.
It's like, I have honor of Father Leo, in honor of our guest today. I used to have a restaurant. I didn't beat Bobby Flay. I didn't do that. But as we get into the podcast, I was my mother's favorite child. We have that in common. Yep. I wasn't a break dancer.
Okay.
But I was a chef. Today's guest, Father Leo Padalinghug, is a best-selling author, award-winning break dancer, professional chef, even winning against famous Bobby Flay. We're going to hear about that a little bit. And last but not least, a priest. His diverse background gives him a unique perspective on ministry and family life, and we are grateful to have him on the show again today. Father Leo, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you all. Thanks for having me.
I wanted you back on. If you haven't seen our previous episode, it was super worth it. And I have to tell you that our oldest was on a retreat, a women's retreat, and someone was talking about you, Father Leo. And Gabriella was a little, she was like, should I say anything? I'm not sure. And this woman mentioned that she heard this podcast, and Gabriella's like, what was the name of it? She's like, I don't remember. She's like, was it Julie and Gino show? And she's like, yeah, that's the one. She's like, those are my parents. So hopefully we didn't embarrass her. But oh, I know that's what we're here for. I learned that that's what we're here for. But I really wanted to talk about the youth, what you've experienced in your vocation, and just a better understanding of how we can serve them better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually got into the priesthood because I was involved with youth ministry. Strangely enough, I didn't know I was going to be a youth minister. I got back from a pilgrimage, and I remember watching this show on EWTN. It was just so, it was back in the 90s, okay? So this is before they had, you know, editing suites and such like that. They were working off of VHSs and whatnot. But they had a show, and it was from the Life Team program. And I thought to myself, I would like to learn more about this. And they actually had some sort of event. And I signed up for it thinking that it was going to be like a youth event. And I had just turned into a young adult. I was 19 at the time. And I show up, and it's actually a training program for potential youth ministers. And so I was a trained youth minister at the end of this whole event, and I helped to spread the Life Team program in the Baltimore, Maryland area. And so I got involved in youth ministry because as a young person, we didn't have that stuff. We didn't have any cool things like the Life Team program, you know? And so getting involved as a youth minister and seeing what they're going through now, today, they have it harder than I could have ever imagined growing up as a teenager.
What's different now? Because I that's the thing, is we don't quite understand. You know, we're adults now in this world right now. And when we look back when we were younger, it was a little different. So yeah. How can we better understand where the kids are right now?
And how we can help them.
Yeah.
So what's different? Because what's different is how we kind of approach how we help them. So what is different is the amount of communication that is at fingertips these days. We didn't have the internet growing up. And so this whole idea of instant communication. So people are being overloaded with information and disinformation. And it doesn't come from a president, you know, maybe some presidents more than others. I'm not saying who, I'm just simply saying that it doesn't come from the president. It actually comes from the political world that has influenced the entertainment industry, and you're seeing it even creep into sports and into even the hospitality industry. You know, I mean, everyone has to be woke these days. It's just so ridiculous. So the amount of information, the ability to spread lies but make it look good with just amazing editing. Thirdly, they have what I would call the demons of the society, which just wants to confuse people, have such popularity that if anyone like the Catholic Church challenges them, they can cancel us instantly. They can shame us into fear and submission. They have such a mechanism of control. But they also have what I would call a lot of developed illogical argumentation that is always based on feelings. So you just look at, for example, the whole transgender movement, and I pray for people who experience gender dysphoria. But that was even something that happened in my day growing up as a teenager. But we never talked about it as much because people didn't understand it. Now they have sophisticated language that makes it sound like it's a scientific reality when we know it's more than anything, peer pressure and social influences and psychological manipulation. But they're able to package it in a way. They have very sophisticated words to spread lies. So there's a lot that's different from when I was growing up than what kids are going through right now.
Your message on your website says bringing people together one meal at a time. How do you
So, well, first of all, you cook really well. You know, I mean, just cook
that?
some damn good food. Okay. I mean, that's it. If people are smelling deliciousness, they're going to be like, what's for dinner? You know, and they're going to show up. There's actually a really funny kid on TikTok. He records his mother who just cooks very poorly.
Oh,
And,
gosh.
you know, I mean, she's miserable. I mean, she would make literally a ketchup sandwich. He would ask her, what mom, what you doing? Because I'm making a snack, you know, it's ketchup sandwiches. This is how I grew up. And he would just make fun of her. So they're TikTok famous because she just sucks at cooking. You know? And if you want to keep your kids together, one of the things you can do is obviously cook together, make sure that they understand what they're putting in their bodies. You know, bringing people together is always going to come around a meal. You know, we're recording this around the Thanksgiving season and during the holidays. So you can imagine if there was really bad food, people aren't coming to your house. And if they do, it's because they really love you.
I don't have that problem. So, Father Leo, you're on TikTok. What is up with that? I heard that you prayed and God said yes. Father Leo's got to get on TikTok. What was the decision to get yourself on TikTok?
Yeah, I was paid by the Chinese Communist government.
You too, huh?
Yeah, so TikTok is just another level of social media stratagem, but it also requires, you know, for me, it's not only a calling to just try to be in that platform, it's also learning the algorithms to see what works with certain demographics. And so it's just constantly challenging people in ministry to find out what's the best, most effective way to talk to people at different generations. And so it's not as much of a calling as it is a challenge, because we do have to proclaim the good news in season, out of season, at the pulpit, and on the internet.
And
And TikTok is obviously popular.
hopefully the Chinese communists, you can convert a few of them as well while they're listening to you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I think what we've got to worry about is if people are doing too much on internet, you know, I mean, because the fact is you can get information. It doesn't have to be China. It could be Iran. It could be, you know, this particular government that wants to spy on everybody too. So we have enemies, foreign and domestic. So we have to remember that social media requires us to be smart, to put ourselves out there, but not make yourself so exposed and vulnerable that you really are naive.
Can you share with your the book that you wrote, Epic Food Fight? In it, you say food is the weapon God uses to save us. Can you go into the book, why you wrote the book, and some examples of that?
Yeah, that was actually my third book that I wrote. And so the first two books were, you know, Grace Before Meals, and that was about family meals. The second was Spicing Up Married Life, and that was for couples. And but people kept emailing me and saying, you know, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep putting, you know, why do you constantly write cookbooks? But they're not cookbooks, they're actually pastoral theology books. But people kept asking, what is this about food? What's your fascination? So I kind of cataloged this book, Epic Food Fight, as my introduction into the theology of food. And the reason why I call it a theology of food is because food has a logic. You can approach it either the way the society tells you to, or the way biology tells you, or psychology tells you, or you could approach it theologically. And for God, food has always been a weapon. a weapon to combat the fact that Adam and Eve took one big bite of the forbidden fruit. And to rectify that theologically, Jesus becomes literally the blessed fruit that hangs from the tree of life. And when we eat that, it becomes the remedy to all of the ill from the poison of the forbidden fruit. But it also becomes the strength that we get, because if we are what we eat, we become the body of Christ. We can fight against evil the way Jesus fights against evil. It's also true that in the ritual of exorcism, you know, priests will oftentimes come in and bring the monstrance in order to protect people with it, and also to curse the demons that are maybe possessing a person. So it really is a weapon. In the same way we use food to get people to do what we want, you know, it's so clear. The more you touch into what people are hungering for, the more you can control them.
That's actually interesting.
Where does chicken parm fall into this? That's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, I mean, as far as chicken parm is concerned, it all depends. I mean, I've been to places where it's not a weapon. It's more of like a biological lab experiment gone bad. So you got to make sure that chicken parm is better be crispy and gooey at the same time. It's a lot harder than people think.
I'm with you on that. But it is so true that you could use food. It's so interesting. I never really thought about it until you put it that way. I can make my kids do anything I want with a good meal. And it's true, 100% true. And you can, you were talking about the generations, how you talk to each generation right now, and you could do all of that through food. And it's amazing what you could do.
Sure. So, I mean, young people are developing a very unique palate. They can handle more than we could ever have. I mean, like these days, they're all taking pictures of their food. They're all trying to be very daring and bold. They want to go to these different countries and explore their cuisine and culture. These are things that, you know, my generation, we never did necessarily so proactively. I mean, they're taking pictures of them walking through the markets and such like that. It's becoming very fashionable. And while I appreciate people's interest in the food, it almost seems as if people are more concerned about what they're eating rather than why they're eating and who is feeding them. And then how do you turn what you're eating into some sort of positive action so that you can feed others?
Mm-hmm. You say in the last podcast, we talked about being in service also. Isn't that a big component of that when you're serving food, being in service and giving yourself when you're presenting the meal, and even part of, as far as part of the family?
Oh, for sure. So service is a weapon against laziness. It's a weapon against ingratitude. It's a weapon against the entitled world that we have become. And so you can see how the hospitality industry, and I'm kind of putting that proper emphasis, is because it's a hospital. It's a weapon against sickness and death. So hospitality, whether it be food or the people who serve it, these are weapons against a world that has just gone wrong.
What do we do? And, you know, as parents, you know, I'm sure there's grandparents listening, there's young people listening. My worry, and of course, I mean, I guess as a mom, and I'm sure you've seen this, is that the younger generation, the faith, they're leaving the faith. They don't even know what religion they are half the time. You know what I mean? They're just living their life. And there's nothing of substance there. Are you noticing that, or are you noticing something different?
No, that's everywhere I go. Whenever I give people an opportunity for Q&A, that's the number one question. How do I get my kids to get back to church? Because so many of them are, you know, so smart, but they don't know what to do with their life. They have access to information, but haven't done a darn thing about actually investigating the questions that they have regarding their own Catholic faith. So it's just embarrassing, really, what we have become. And I say embarrassing because in a way, it's the church's fault. We haven't done a good job with it. That's why organizations like the Life Team program are really touching hearts and minds. So a couple things you can do. One, to get your families back together, to get your families talking and learning from each other, buy my book. I mean, I just hate to say it, but just the book Saving the Family addresses these topical issues that keep families from coming together, you know? So whether it be teenagers, whether it be them becoming adults and raising their own family and you becoming empty nesters, the book Saving the Family is all about bringing people together in the different generations that a family is going to go through. The second thing that I always encourage parents to do, especially grandparents, is stop fearing. Don't let your fear be made known, because it just makes you annoying to your kids. We become kind of these victims, like, you're hurting me. Your kids don't do it because they want to hurt you. They're not going to church because they hate you. They're doing it because they just don't think it's important. Mm-hmm. And so what you do to respond to that is show them that it is important. Don't tell them. Show them why it is important. And then also show them that church is way more than a place to make you feel miserable, because that's honestly what people think. They think that church is here to make you hate life for an hour. You know, that's what they think. Or to hate themselves because of sin. So what I always tell parents to do is show off the beauty of the Catholic faith. Go on a pilgrimage with me and take pictures and selfies of all of the amazing food you're eating, all the amazing places you're seeing, all the beautiful cultures you're experiencing. Post that on the internet and tag them. And they will be so jealous that they will want what you have. But if you just kind of live a pitiful life and say, woe is me, they're going to think that your faith is doing nothing for you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real challenge to parents and grandparents. Don't fret over your children. Just let them know that faith is important to you through your actions, that it's necessary, actually, not important. Live the best life, show the beauty. And then I hate to say it this way, but let go and let God do the rest. Enter into deep intercessory prayer, novenas, read the scriptures, do a lot of indulgences for your kids. God hears those prayers and will humble them to the point where they will hopefully one day see their need for God as great.
PlatingGrace.com. You didn't mention the website. You didn't mention the sauces, the four books, those aprons that make you look slim. There's a lot of stuff on that website. What's the website again?
I can't remember exactly. Well, it is Plating Grace, and that's kind of what I do. And most people can always go back and listen to that first podcast, because really what I try to do whenever I meet people the first time, and a lot of people aren't going to know who I am or what I do, I need to literally shove it down their throats, so to speak, so that they kind of get a glimpse of what kind of, first of all, goofiness we have, what kind of fun we have, but also the seriousness of the messaging. And interestingly enough, the marketing works. Mm-hmm. It makes people remember it. But then if they go deeper, they get more into an attuned level of the seriousness of the work that we do. Like if all I did was approach the seriousness in that first conversation, people would literally be a little overwhelmed. They would probably just think, oh my gosh, this is intense. But now they know that you start off sweet, then we can get to the bitter.
So what you're saying is you start off with dessert, you're starting off with the cookies, and then you're going to give them the filet mignon after that? Is that what you're telling me right now?
No, not at all. We call it an appetizer.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about it, child. You said sweet. Sweet, so I'm going right to the dessert. So, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, and the dessert is definitely an important part of the meal. In America, and you know, in some cultures, we make it such a big deal that it's kind of excessive. Mm-hmm. And it really should never be as big as it is. I mean, you just had a high caloric meal with meat, potatoes, vegetables, and starches, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I kind of go by the European approach to dessert, where it's something small and manageable, filled with flavor and uniqueness, a little sweet, a little tart. It's a good way to kind of end the meal. But what I want to do in every first conversation is set the tone and make people hungry for more.
What is your favorite meal? What do you like? What do you like to eat?
Really, I never answer that question because it's all about a mood. You know, what am I feeling today? Sometimes it's Italian, Asian, Filipino, you know, South American cuisine. It could literally be all I want are pork rinds. I mean, yes. Like, all depends. Some days that's all I want to eat is just bacon and pork rinds, and that's it. You know,
Father, we were just in Italy over the summer, the whole family. My husband's whole side of the family lives there. So it was incredible. And the tradition there was just, oh, it was so beautiful. And I have to say it, you know, as a Christian, you go there and it's like, oh, here's where it is. Like, it just, it was incredible. It was
the symbols,
very different than here. I feel like here you kind of have to look for the Christianity, the history of it. I mean, obviously we're in St. Augustine, it's a little different. But over there, the tradition, and I mean, even the meals with the families, everything was so different there. And I was trying to encourage, we did a podcast on bringing back tradition here in the United States. What is your thought on that? How it is maybe in the Philippines different than here compared to Italy, compared to all over?
Well, the traditions actually are different now because of culture. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, families did eat together. That's just the reality. I mean, every community in America prior to like the 1950s, we ate together. That's what we did. So we carried on those traditions from our immigrant relatives and upbringing. But in Europe, it is unique because they eat seasonally. They don't have, you know, fruits and vegetables throughout the year. I mean, they wait until it's time for that produce. And then they make a big deal of it. They celebrate the seasons. Secondly, they eat liturgically, which is different from seasonally. Liturgically means that they really highlight feast days, Christmas, Easter, the local patron saints, you know, and they'll also talk about your own personal devotions to certain saints. But they also, what I would call, are intentional about what the meal is. So the tradition for them is that they would eat, you know, at least one big meal, generally in the daytime when people would come back from plowing the field, so to speak. And then they would have a siesta, and then they would have another meal in the end after working. So they have a unique schedule that's built on a natural agrarian society. Here in America, we are, you know, fundamentally capitalists. And so we are eating at a time when we can, like we'll squeeze in a meal for lunch, you know, a quick lunch break, and then we'll have a bigger meal later in the evening. Whereas in Europe, that's not always the case. They won't have a big meal in the evening. They would have it in the daytime, take a nap, work a little bit more, have dinner. That's not our mentality. I don't mind both. Both are good, but they are eating intentionally. In America, we are only intentional if it's kind of like, I have an appointment, I have this to do, or if I'm on keto. So it's a different mentality altogether with our intention and meals.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
What would be something that you want to leave the listeners with? Something that they could take home and really pray about, think about, apply to their life?
Yeah.
And talk to all the generations because everyone's listening.
Yeah. As far as something that I'd kind of like leave for people to chew on, you know, that's again, a thought that we have is I'd like for people to think about all of the different ways food helps them to come closer together and closer to God. That's the whole theology of food references in, you know, the book Epic Food Fight. It's think about the ways that people come together because of food. Again, we're recording this during the holiday seasons, and everybody turns Catholic for some reason. Everyone is always offering up Eucharist, which is in Greek word for Thanksgiving. And then during Christmas, everyone again turns Catholic because they start giving gifts to everyone, even if they don't believe in God. But this is the whole point of why we give gifts, is because we have received from God. And therefore are called to give to others. And this always happens around a meal. And so just think of the power of food and what does that mean for you and how is it going to change your life so that you can take that power and do something good with it for others.
Father Leo, where can the listeners get a hold of you? Website, any other?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm all over the place these days. I'd love to see people live. They can listen to some of the work that I do watching on the TV show, which is called Savoring Our Faith. They've got the books. We're going to be coming out with a podcast, God willing, a new podcast later this year. But all of it is found at platinggrace.com.
Thank you, Father Leo. For all the listeners down below, we are hosting an event with Father Leo. Maybe you can give a little bit of an overview of what you do as far as these fundraisers that you go out and become part of, as far as cooking demonstrations. And would you mind sharing that with the listeners as well?
Absolutely. So we have the great idea and the blessing that in January, we're going to come together in the Jacksonville area. We're going to have a multi-course meal. I'm going to be cooking it with my staff and a bunch of volunteers down there. And we're doing this along with a cooking demonstration, which comes with a talk. So sometimes people think cooking demonstration, that sounds so boring. And they are boring. I mean, it's like, whatever, I'll get the recipe somehow. But the way I do my cooking demonstrations are always within a message-oriented presentation. So it's a talk with a cooking demonstration. And this is all done as a fundraiser to support, as we were talking earlier today, the Life Team program. And we want to kind of put our money where our mouth is. You know, we talk about what can we do for the kids? Well, put the money in programs that actually do work. And so I'm looking forward to not only cooking with people and sharing that message, but also doing what we can to raise funds for good youth ministry programs.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I'm super excited. Hopefully my husband wears his chef coat and, you know, gets in the kitchen with you, Father, because that's very exciting. I'll take some pictures. But that is February 2nd in St. Augustine, which is right next to Jack's. And we're super excited about that.
We wanted to thank you for being a great guest today. Again, as usual, please go to platinggrace.com. I'll sell it to him. It's a great website. The books are awesome. We've read, you know, the first two books. I just saw the third one. I really want to read that third one. So everyone go out, visit platinggrace.com. All the information is down below in the show notes. And we just want to thank everyone for spending some time with us today. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Father.
Thank you. My pleasure.